The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPont.com.
This is Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When is a chicken sandwich not just a chicken sandwich? When it's a Chick-fil-A. The popular fast food chain is now part of our political messaging, but is eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich the same as chanting build that wall? I don't think so, because it's still just a chicken sandwich at the end of the day, but we are drawing distinctions. What is happening with all these with consumers as brand loyalty and our political stripes collide? Do you care about politics and saving the planet and equal rights? Does that matter when you go shopping? How do you figure all of that out? We want you to join our conversation this afternoon. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Tweet us at tprsource. We're joined this hour with Diana Pearl. She's a writer for Adweek covering brand marketing. Diana, welcome to The Source. And also with us, Rachel Kelly's in the studio, co-founder of the Ethical Network of San Antonio. It's great to have you here, Rachel.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
And also with us is Julie Irwin, professor in the Business, Government, and Social Society and Marketing Department at the University of Texas at Austin. And Julie, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
So let's start off with a clip. This is it kind of sets it up. It shows you, not to take this too seriously, this is from Seinfeld.
I've never had food ordered in advance before.
Yeah, I could have stayed home and ordered a pizza from Pequeno's.
Pequeno's? Oh, no. You should never order pizza from Pequeno's.
Why not?
Because the owner contributes a lot of money to those fanatical anti-abortion groups.
So you won't eat the pizza?
Mm-mm, no way.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what if, Poppy felt the same way.
Well, I guess I wouldn't eat here then.
Really?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, perhaps we should inquire. Poppy? Oh, Poppy. Could I have a word?
Yes, Jim. I just checked your dog. It is more succulent than even I had at home.
Poppy, I was just curious. Where do you stand on the abortion issue?
When my mother was abducted by the communists, she wasn't with a child.
Oh, boy.
But the communists put an end to that. So on this issue, there's no debate. And no intelligent person can think differently.
Well, Poppy.
And what gives you the right to do that?
The Supreme Court gives me the right to do that. Let's go, Jerry. Come on.
I heard that. Let's go, Henry.
We just got here.
I'm with you, Poppy.
Let's go.
And I am not coming back.
You're not a welcome.
Well, I'm certainly glad I brought it up.
And yada, 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 the debate continues. People are talking, taking a stand about where they are with their politics as they go shopping. But there's no straight lines here. It can be very messy pretty quickly. Diana Pearl, writer for Adweek, covering brand marketing. How does all this work? What do corporations think about this?
Well, you know, it's not, you know, Seinfeld obviously is a show that's been around for a bit. And, you know, this isn't a new concept of a brand having a brand purpose. But it can be something, you know, as non-controversial as, you know, Dawn aligns themselves with, you know, the National Bird Foundation, and they like help save birds from oil spills and that sort of thing, you know, something that most people can get behind. But then you have the organizations that do align themselves with more controversial causes, and that does have the potential to ruffle some feathers. You know, one big example that we've seen in the past year is the Nike Colin Kaepernick ad. That's obviously, you know, the taking a knee during the NFL national anthem, or during the national anthem at NFL games. You know, that's something that really brings out strong opinions in people. And Nike, I'm sure, knew they were taking a risk in doing that, but it ended up really paying off for them. You know, I hear a lot of it's better to stand for something and take a stance, even if it might alienate some people, because then at least your customers know who they stand for. You know, people do care about shopping at and engaging with brands that take a stand. So it's something that, you know, maybe has some risk, but can also have a big payoff.
Julie Irwin at the University of Texas at Austin. Is this something that is really being studied and analyzed, or a lot of data goes behind before a company decides where they're going to take a stand on major issues, or is this a gut reaction?
That's a good question. I can't really know how every company looks at it. I'm guessing that Nike might have done some research before they engaged Colin Kaepernick. I'm guessing it's unlikely that Chick-fil-A did. I think that was just a gut reaction. I think it probably depends on the company.
The company, what their brand is, what they're trying to achieve, who their market is. Are they looking at the long game, or are they trying to just deal with quarterly returns, Julie?
Well, I think sometimes they really do believe. I mean, they're giving money because they have a belief, and so it has nothing to do with marketing. It just has implications for them with politicians and with customers. Other times, I think with Nike, it was really savvy. I mean, I think I agree with Diana. It was a good, savvy move on their part because they have a young positioning, but they're not a young brand. And so how do they stay young and hip? This was a really good way, I think, for them to do that. So I think sometimes it is a brand strategy. I think other times it's just a belief.
Rachel Kelly, co-founder of the Ethical Network of San Antonio. Talk about the Ethical Network of San Antonio. What do you do?
Well, we are a group of individuals that came together to prioritize ethics in both work and consumerism, you know, consuming products. And we really wanted to have a local community of people to open up this discussion and to support one another. I really believe that we're stronger together. And so we have done events. We've brought in a founder of an ethical shoe company. It's a fair trade shoe company out of Oregon. We brought her here to speak to the community to just to learn more about that process. We have shown a showing of the film, The True Cost, which documents the some of the fast fashion and what happens with that.
Sweatshop labor.
Yes. And so we're trying to build a community of people who are focused. And it's not just around fashion, but in all areas. Because when we talk about consumerism and the focus, are people making choices based on their political beliefs, their social beliefs, environmental beliefs? You know, there's a wide variety. It's hard to just to say that I'm an ethical consumer because there's many facets to that. So someone may they may boycott something based on a political belief, but then they'll go and they will purchase from someone who is using sweatshop labor. Does that make sense? So
you have to look at the supply chain or the upstream issues that led to you getting that product right now. So if you have like a blood diamond on your ring, on your finger, you know, do you have to consider that as you show off the bling?
Correct. And some people, they focus on one aspect, but really there's a wide, diverse area: health, environmental, social, human. I mean, to be a conscious consumer, there's a wide variety of things to take into consideration.
Yeah, and sometimes people just want to have a chicken sandwich.
True.
So we're going to talk about that and more. We really want to hear from our listeners on this because I want to draw a bead on what is the calculus that people are engaging. There's a lot to consider: where you get your coffee, what kind of fashion you wear, what kind of car you drive. Are you really making a statement about your own personal ethics? Do you support certain brands for moral or ethical reasons? Are you more loyal to brands that align with certain issues? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about belief-driven buyers and conscientious consumers. What are you thinking about when you make these choices? Are there certain brands that you avoid because they're out of step with your beliefs, or maybe it doesn't matter to you at all? Let me go over to Diana Pearl, a writer for Adweek covering brand marketing. And we're finding out through surveys that there's a lot of consumers that really, they say they really care about this, right?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think it's something that consumers care about more than ever. And at least they, you know, they think they care about it. But I do think there can be moments of, you know, for example, again, when the Colin Kaepernick ad came out that, you know, people were burning their Nikes. Are those same people still boycotting Nike today?
How many people were actually burning their Nikes? You know, it seems like, you know, you can take five people doing something and you put it on social media and it gets amplified by the reactionary cable channels. And it's going to be, you know, is it really people burning their Nikes? It's, you know, you got to wonder about that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think when I say people, it probably was like 10 or under, you know, you're not sure, but there, yeah, I agree that the social media sort of echo chamber makes it seem like it's so much more than it is. I definitely think there can be moments, you know, if a brand's in the spotlight for taking a certain stance that people, you know, say, I love this brand because of this, or I dislike this brand because of this, but seeing if they'll follow through on that for months and even years to come, is something that I think is a little more murky.
And yeah. And so 64% of consumers is a number I've seen. They align at themselves as belief driven buyers. It's one thing to say that you are on a survey, but it's another thing when you're out shopping around, because they, you know, manufacturers, they say the two things that drive consumer choices are availability and price. So is that true? I mean, are they really going to ignore price and availability in order to go with their beliefs, Diana?
I think no. I don't think they will avoid that, you know, price and availability. I do think that those are two really important qualities. But I think if a brand takes a stand or a brand develops a reputation for, you know, siding with things, causes that, you know, are worthy and important to a lot of consumers, I think it's more even just about creating this positive brand perception that can exist over time. You know, maybe somebody will react positively or not positively to a certain ad campaign or, you know, something a brand does. But if they, you know, again, with Nike, you know, they have a history of activism. And if you're a consumer who cares about that, you know, that is just going to even subconsciously create this positive perception of Nike in your head. You see them coming out with ads regularly that you agree with. You see them doing things as a brand that you support. So it just, even if you're not thinking about it exactly when you're making the purchase, when you're evaluating, are these more expensive? But it gives you just that positive, you know, warm and fuzzy feeling about the brand, which I do think can be a powerful tool.
And Julie Irwin, professor in the Business, Government, and Society and Marketing Department at the University of Texas at Austin, how does that work? I mean, isn't the person just concerned about what shoe is going to fit on my foot and is going to help me run the miles I want to run? Or are they really going to be concerned about what are people going to think about me when they see me wearing Nike? And are they going to think one thing or another about my political beliefs based on my shoe wear?
Well, if people were only interested in whether it fit and whether they could use it for sports, then we wouldn't have Nike, right? I mean, these brands are extremely popular, and there's a lot of value to the brand. People pay a lot of money for these brands. And so, no, I mean, shopping in general is, especially branding, is very complicated, and they spend years developing these brands, and people have complex relationships with them, very positive relationships sometimes, kind of emotional relationships almost with these brands. And they, so I guess the short answer is no. I mean, shopping is always, these days, has complexity to it, especially for branded fashion goods like shoes.
And chicken sandwiches. Let me go to callers.
Sandwiches maybe less so. I would say sandwiches less so, which is, I think, why it's not completely clear that Chick-fil-A has been punished, at least by consumers, because I think sandwiches, that's different because, you know, you're hungry, you smell the sandwich, it smells good, you buy it. And so I think that's maybe a little different from fashion.
Yeah, so that's the other thing I was interested in, like trying to make this distinction between people are they hold a fashion accountable, maybe some food products, like, you know, we were really concerned about dolphin in our tuna for a while. Maybe for energy purposes, they want to drive a green car that's maybe a little bit more expensive than a fossil burning car. So people, it kind of, it's not just a single act. There's a lot of context in each one of these exchanges, Julie Irwin. How do they break that down?
Well, I think the same way you break down all the actions of your life, right? So you have your values, and you know, you're nice to people because you think that's important, but maybe you're not nice to this one person as much as this other person. I think it's just purchasing is just as complicated as any other kind of action that's driven by values. It's just that for a long time, we just didn't think of purchasing that way. We thought of it only in terms of price, and I think that was a mistake. I think that now we're realizing that people, you know, people are complex and they have values. And so if you look at companies like Whole Foods or Everlane or Patagonia or, you know, any of these companies that are really trying to do a better job, they're successful because people do care. And so they care just the same, in the same messy way they care about everything else in their life. Of course, people are inconsistent, but I guess I would take issue with the idea that the inconsistency means it's somehow not real. I think it's just as real as any other value.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. What do you think about belief-driven buying? And Rebecca is on the line. Rebecca, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I totally believe that belief-driven buying is something that is here and here to stay. In the past, like the commentator said, that we didn't think of it that way, but we do now, because in a day and age where our voices are less and less heard up at the big government level, this is a way of us making an impact and making a small statement, however small and however minor. Companies are never going to do the right thing unless they're motivated, and profits are motivated, sales are motivated through buying, and so our buying matters and how we spend our money. And so if you're given two products that are the same price, same availability, if one brand is doing the right thing on a local level, state level, federal level, world level, I'm going to choose that brand over the other brand.
All right, Rebecca, thank you for that. Let's go to Rachel Kelly. She's the co-founder of the Ethical Network of San Antonio. Is that pretty much the way you see things, Rachel, that we can change the world one purchase at a time, particularly if we kind of act as one on these things?
I believe we can, and that was one of the reasons we started Ethical Network of San Antonio, because we are stronger together, and we can come together. Even if we have differences about what ethical means, for example, in our organization, we have some people that are vegan and some people that are not. So some people will purchase leather and some people won't, and that's okay, but there's still many things that we come together on. But I think, you know, we have been conscious consumers, many of us have been, for many years. I know I have been since I was earning an income. So for over 30 years, I've considered myself a conscious consumer and really wanted to make an impact with my purchase. But I think now it's much easier. We have the internet. You know, we didn't have that 30 years ago to bring people together. Now I can go online and I can go for brands. I grew up in a small rural town in Alabama, and I would try to find organic food or find, you know, Whole Food, or try to find brands that were ethical, and you couldn't do it back then. So now I can go online and I can have anything that I want delivered to my door, so I can make a decision and I can connect with people all over the world in order to make changes. So I think it's a really exciting time, and I think that's why we see such a surge, such this increase in this, you know, idea of conscious consumerism.
So consumer choice, giving people the opportunity to shop online, also gather information online about where they're getting their products from, and maybe even checking upstream about the supply chain on that product. All this empowers the consumer.
Yes, and it's an exciting time. I remember back in the day when we would order catalogs, I used to cloth diaper. This was many moons ago. And so we couldn't just go online and order, you know, cloth diapers from a cloth diapering company. You had to get the catalog, and then you had to read about each of the companies and what was their ideas and beliefs. And so to now just be able to go online and have a wide array of choices is much easier, I think, to be a consumer these days.
It can also be exhausting.
It was exhausting.
All right, let me go to Crystal. Crystal's on the phone. Hi, Crystal. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. To that point, I just wanted to also clarify that it is much easier for consumers to make these conscious choices. I personally have animal rights close and dear to my heart, and I just have an app on my phone where I can scan barcodes in the product aisles to make sure that they're not tested on animals, and then I buy accordingly. And I just do it at my own HEB. It just takes one simple scan through a QR code scanner, and I'm good to go. So I think technology is really helping this issue.
Thank you for that, Crystal. Let me go to Diana Pearl with Adweek covering brand marketing. These types of apps, is this something that are being widely used? Is this going to impact what corporations do?
To be honest, I'm not super familiar with those apps, but I'm definitely intrigued by them. And I think that's interesting that it makes it so easy to make a decision based on something that matters to you. I do think, especially with animal rights, you know, that is, people are very like, I don't want, you know, something that's tested on animals, and having a resource like that would make it, that makes it easy to make those decisions. It's almost like, why wouldn't you use it if that is something that is close to your heart and something you care about? I'm sure that as people, you know, start to care more and more about, you know, where the products they consume and buy are coming from, which is, I definitely think, something we're seeing in general, just a move towards a demand for greater transparency from companies, that we'll see more and more apps like that pop up as consumers maybe are dissatisfied with what brands are giving them and want to take matters into their own hands.
Yeah, but I mean, why wouldn't you use them? I mean, there's a lot of trust that goes into relying on an app or any kind of service that's going to help you decide what products are good and what are not, what you should avoid. And the metrics that we use to figure that out are also very kind of fuzzy and kind of hard to gauge. And so Julie Irwin at the University of Texas at Austin, I mean, is it really reasonable to expect that you can pass those decisions off to a third party like an app and still achieve what you're trying to achieve?
Yes. I mean, a qualified yes. For animal testing, we actually know what companies do and which ones do and which ones don't. And there's labeling, and the labeling is actually, you know, unlike some labeling, that labeling is actually trustworthy. The organic labeling is trustworthy. B Corp labeling is trustworthy. There's fair trade labeling that's trustworthy. I mean, I think there are more trustworthy organizations giving us the information than non-trustworthy ones. The main thing is kind of looking for the label, and also there aren't enough different labels for consumers to use. And so you can find out if your cosmetics are tested on animals. It's maybe harder to find out the overall environmental impact of what you're doing. Sometimes there's not really labeling for that. The organic labeling is extremely strict. So I think sometimes we decide that the information we have is not enough, so that we don't have to, I do a lot of research on this, that people want to stay willfully ignorant because it's easier. I mean, obviously it's easier. I do it myself. And so, but the truth is the information is there. I think eventually we need to get to a place where some of this stuff is just illegal, so consumers are not having to drive it. It's a concern I have. If we expect busy consumers to, you know, going through their day to be the ones to make our marketplace ethical, maybe that's not reasonable. I mean, at some point we probably need to, and we're not going to outlaw political beliefs, obviously, but we may want to have a certain level of trust in how they're treating animals, or a certain level of environmental friendliness that we want to start. Certainly, you know, a certain level of how we treat workers in other countries who make our clothing.
So that having slave labor on seafood vessels, should be anyone that's involved with that, that would be illegal, that would be banned from the marketplace. Don't just depend upon ethical consumers from chasing that information down and making their own decisions. We need some sort of the force of law behind it. We're going to take a break. We want to hear from you. What do you think about belief-driven buying? Do you weigh all of these issues when you go to the grocery store, when you go to the shopping mall, when you buy a new vehicle? What are the factors that you consider? We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Americans want companies to get politically involved, and they think they already know, they have a good idea what these brands, what their political leanings are. You can kind of guess what you think one brand might be doing versus another. We know that Chick-fil-A, the sandwich thing, there's a controversy because Chick-fil-A and anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and donations have been involved, and that has spilled over into decisions here in San Antonio at the International Airport, as the local city council decided that they did not want to lease space to a Chick-fil-A there. Is that something that is a concern? Should you, as a consumer, do you get to make those decisions as well? You do get to make those decisions as well if you choose to, but how do you do that? The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about this issue. And this is Gladys. And Gladys, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I just think we have a lot of power as consumers. You know, you hear about in the news a car company that has not been honest about reporting their emissions, or we hear about a bank that has defrauded people or made false accounts and taken people for a lot of money. We don't have to do business with those people. And if we don't buy that brand or use that bank, and people in large numbers bow out because of negative press, then I think that would be powerful.
All right, Gladys, thank you for the call. And that kind of fits in really well with what your view is, Rachel Kelly, at the Ethical Network of San Antonio. How do y'all promote what you feel to be an ethical consumer practice?
Well, I think we are a diverse group of people, as we said, and so we actually have people who think differently. Maybe some promote one thing or another, but we do all focus on, you know, human rights, focusing on global mission, social responsibility. We are really focused on building a local community of people who are interested in this idea and bringing them together so that we can have conversations and learn from one another. I think that's the biggest way that you can, you know, advance ideas, is bringing people who have different viewpoints together and learning about one another and, you know, just acknowledging them as a person and learning from them. Why do they believe what they believe? And then you, on the other hand, sharing that same experience. Why do you believe what you believe? And we're stronger for that. We're, I think, a better people for that. And I want to give an example. I run a nonprofit thrift store, and the other day a lady came in and we were playing Christian music. We play that. We play one of the two radio stations here in San Antonio. And she came in and she said, I don't believe, I don't have the same values that you have. There's many paths, you know, to heaven. And that was great. She said, but I still can shop here. I can still choose to shop here because I like what you do for the community and I like your services. And so I think that is very powerful when consumers can disagree or still have a conversation, still learn from one another, and still support local businesses and local communities, even if they maybe differ. But the great thing is she has the ability not to shop at the store. She has that right to say, no, I don't like that music you play, and I can shop elsewhere. And so we live in a great society to allow that. But I think bringing together just the open discussion to say, I don't believe what you're playing or what you're doing, but these are my beliefs, and we can learn from them.
Now, there was a study, a report done, Doing Business in an Activist World, from the Global Strategic Group. It says that Democrats in particular are in favor of brands getting involved in these issues. 80% give companies credit for taking a stance, as compared to 48% of Republicans, and 37% of Republicans seek to inform themselves about a company's corporate values when they're choosing to buy something. That's 28% for Republicans. So this does also sort of cut along partition lines. Diana Pearl, a writer for Adweek covering brand marketing, is this something that brands take into account when they're trying to figure out where they're going to position themselves, that they're going to say, well, and they would run the risk analysis?
Yeah, I definitely think brands, you know, they do their research, especially, you know, a big brand like a Nike or a Gillette will do their research and see, you know, is this going to have a positive reaction? Is this going to alienate people? Is it worth it to alienate, you know, X number of people in order to please Y number of people? I definitely think brands are conscious of when they're taking a risk and, or, you know, are conscious of, you know, this is something we need to do to, you know, please our customers or to take a stand that might actually attract new customers. I definitely think brands do their research and are very aware.
Let's go to the phone lines. Clinton. Hi, Clinton. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was listening to the show, and I feel that if a company has things that are in conflict with my ethical or political values, I have a right to use my spending power to either stay away from them or to support them. A common app that I use to scan to determine if a company is in support or not of my ethical values is one called Boycott. And you can just simply scan the UPC label, and it will scan through your values that you annotated on the app and determine if that product is in support of your values.
All right, Clinton, thank you for that. It's called Boycott. And Julie Irwin at the University of Texas at Austin, as consumers gain more and more information using apps, how is this troubling? Is this a problem, or is this a golden age for being able to empower consumers?
I think it's a golden age. I really agree with everyone else that we have so much more information now. And one aspect of the internet that's really nice, too, is that we have a lot of companies now that don't have to have retail spaces. So they're a lot more nimble. They can get off the ground and just reflect their values right off the bat. So you think about a place like American Giant. They make everything in the U.S., and they ethically produce everything. They don't have stores, and so they're able to just start going, and people start buying. They've been very successful. And I think it's absolutely a golden age in sort of almost every way. So you can, it used to be if you wanted to find a company that didn't do animal testing for shampoo or makeup, you'd have to go to a health food store. Maybe you didn't have one in your town. Now you can find it at Sephora, and you can find it anywhere. You can order it off Amazon. And even in the past 5 years, it's been an explosion across different markets of ethical goods that reflect people's values. And so, yeah, golden age would be exactly the way I would put it. Yeah.
But so here in San Antonio, we not only are consumers wanting to make these choices, but they want their local representatives to also make similar choices. So we had the local city council vote not to lease out space to Chick-fil-A at the airport. And they're basically, you know, acting on behalf of what they see as what the citizens would want them to do. And is that just adding another wrinkle to this, another stage? Is this the next part of the evolution in this trend, Julie Irwin?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that, like I said earlier, I'm not sure that consumers drove any kind of change for Chick-fil-A at first. They backed off a little bit, and then I think their sales weren't hurting, they didn't think, and so they went right back to what they were doing. And I think this is another layer where cities and counties and states can say, you know, we don't want that. And so that's just pressure that can be borne on the company. It could be very effective. I mean, I think they're going to notice that, right? So even if they weren't losing sales for individual customers for whatever reason, they'll lose sales because they can't be in the airport. And, you know, they have to think about, I mean, you know, I think Nike really thought through their stance with Colin Kaepernick, but I don't think Chick-fil-A did, because I think they were just driven by their beliefs, which is fine, but the effect it's going to have on them and their brand may be something that they didn't anticipate. And, you know, governments can come in and express values, and then the citizens can protest that if they want to. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for governments to take a stand.
And Rachel Kelly, so like the city of San Antonio, I think it was a long time ago, 30 years ago, banned the gun shows on city property. And that seemed like, you know, something that maybe a lot of people agreed with at the time. Maybe controversial to some people, but the city is acting as, you know, in response to what they think the people are, and they're making an ethical decision. Is that something that you would agree with? Do you want the city to act in accordance to what you think is ethical consumer behavior?
Well, I think the city is going to make decisions based, you know, our elected officials are going to make decisions, and then they're going to be upheld or it's going to be overturned depending on what the people want. If they don't like what they see happening in San Antonio, they're going to change that by voting in different people. So, you know, I think they
so there is a level of accountability.
There is accountability. You know, they can make those decisions, what they see best for the city. That's what they're here to do, to represent and make the best decisions that they feel for our city. And then the people have a right to look at that and say, yes, that upholds our beliefs, or no, it doesn't, and then they'll make the determination, and things can change.
Right, and so the big question I want to get to when we come back from the break is this actually having an impact on the world? Are things changing because consumers are making these decisions, or are consumers making these decisions really to just so they can live with themselves a little more easily? Or maybe it's both. We'll try and figure that out when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980. We got a lot of callers. We'll get to you on the air right after this break. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about your brand loyalty and your political stripes, what happens when they collide. Got a lot of callers here. Want to talk about our belief-driven buyers. And let's get Larry on the air. Hi, Larry. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to bring up the secondary effects of all of this pickle buying. Companies like Tom's Shoes, for example, I'm sure they're a perfectly ethical company, but the secondary effect of them donating a free pair of shoes every time one of us buys one is that it puts the indigenous people, the indigenous shoemakers in the countries they donate to, out of business. We keep bringing up emissions in cars. It's all fine and well to buy these emission-conscious vehicles, green vehicles, but fact is the largest 15 container vessels pollute more than all the cars combined. So at some point, we have to wonder if what we're doing is in fact helping, or is it only helping us locally?
All right. Unintended consequences and trying to do the right thing with your shopping. Rachel Kelly of the Ethical Network of San Antonio.
I think that is exactly right. He was right on the money with the Tom's issue. And so many people who jumped on that bandwagon and thought, well, this is a wonderful thing, buy one, give one, and then it ran the businesses completely out. And so that wasn't a good thing for that economy or for that area. And so we have to look at the consequences of our actions and not just those immediate feel good, you know, those things that happen. We do have to look long term down the road as how is this affecting a society or a group or a people. So that was a great call.
So you can have an impact on the world, but it may not necessarily be the impact that you were looking for. And let's go to some other callers because I got so many. Kat. Hi, Kat. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm coming at it from a more negative standpoint, and I'm sorry, but I think it's impossible to be a completely ethical consumer in our current capitalist society. You know, you might find a brand that you agree with one aspect of something that they're doing, but, you know, maybe one of their suppliers or maybe somebody, you know, some other aspect of what they're doing you don't agree with. I look at, like, for example, Whole Foods, and like Whole Foods has a lot of, you know, really, really great organic things, local products, et cetera, but they're currently owned by Amazon, and Amazon has a, you know, really lousy record of treating their employees poorly. And so I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that. You know, how do you balance that? Do you balance that at all?
All right. Thank you for that. Julie Irwin, University of Texas at San Antonio, the good versus the perfect.
Yeah, I mean, the good versus the perfect is the right way to put it. I think it's true for anything that you try to do in life, any kind of ethics that you try to have. You can't be a perfectly ethical person, but you're not going to just say, then I'm just going to murder everybody all the time, right? I mean, we do the best we can. And it's true, the more we can shine a light on whether things really are good versus seem good, the better. I mean, I'm actually thrilled that we're even having that conversation because there was a time in which nobody even talked about that. So it's kind of like anything. It's like once you start looking at it, if enough people are looking at it, then people are going to start researching it, and you can actually look it up and try to figure out, is this better or is this better? And so it shows we're on the right track that we're even having these these questions, I think. I think the thing to do is not to give up, not to say, I can never be perfect, so I'm just going to give up, because I think we're in a good stage where we can try to make a big difference if enough of us push, and I think these questions are, you know, they're important to ask, absolutely.
Diana Pearl, writer for Adweek covering brand marketing, are these corporations looking to shine a light on what they're doing frequently? Do they try to use social media? Is that a way to really target the people who are way into belief-driven buying?
Yeah, I definitely think if a corporation, you know, puts a cause or, you know, has something like sustainability or brand transparency as, you know, a major part of their business, you look at Everlane, a direct-to-consumer clothing company that's all, you know, their motto is radical transparency, and they're all about disclosing what factories and what suppliers their garments come from and how everything's made and how it's priced. And that's a huge part of their business. And that's a big reason why they've been successful, is because they've been so open about that. And I do think that businesses, they use social media, they use, you know, the press, they really try to get the news out about this because it is a selling point. You know, and it's something, you know, we saw yesterday, H&M came out and they're going to start listing all of their suppliers on their website for each of their garments, which, you know, for a brand that size is hard to do. And hasn't really been done before, but it's something they say they want to be a pioneer and in this space. And I think that they're trying to get the word out about that also in hopes that other brands will follow suit.
Right. And they want their consumers to follow them on Twitter and other social media so they can continue this relationship. They want to develop a relationship around these issues to create.
Yeah,
more.
Definitely. I think, you know, obviously you want consumers to follow you on Twitter no matter what. And this is a reason for people to do that and spreading the word about, you know, something that a consumer will like and say, hey, I love that this brand is doing that. That's a good reason for them to follow them on social media and then hopefully engage with the brand and purchase their product or service.
How much more are people willing to spend for products that are following their ethical concerns? If there is a coffee making co-op in Honduras versus just off the shelf, you know, whatever brand everyone knows, I'm willing to spend a little bit more, but how much more? Do we know what that could be, Julie Irwin from UT Austin?
It depends on the consumer. There are consumer segments for that, as you know, as well as anything else. Anybody who is barely getting by, we're not, of course, expecting them to pay $1 million for fair trade coffee. But I think among people who, you know, will you spend an extra few cents or an extra dollar? A lot of people will, because people are buying it and people are doing it. And so, and the more people buy it, like organic milk is a good example. It used to be exorbitant. Now it's not much more than non-organic milk because so many people buy it. And I think organic bananas are the same price now almost as regular bananas because so many people buy them. And I think, so the more people buy them, you know, I buy seventh generation detergent. It's not much more expensive or any more expensive than other detergents. And so I think.
So it sounds like you're saying as this scales up, the price will come down and making these mm-hmm. decisions won't be so much of a personal financial sacrifice.
That's right. And that's why Everlane, that's why I mentioned Everlane also earlier, because I think we're all kind of in awe of how well they're doing. They're just not very high priced. And so I think they've been able to make those inroads. People have not had to make a huge sacrifice. I mean, they're more expensive than the Gap, but they're not much more expensive. And so people can kind of get their foot in the door, and then they might start saying, you know, I would like these shirts to last longer, so I might move up to American Giant or Patagonia, because maybe that matters to me. But I think it's a myth that people won't pay for it. I think that's not the problem. I think the problem is people don't know because it's hard to find out. And I think, you know, there's convenience.
Okay. Here's Charlotte. Charlotte, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks. I am a firm believer in women's reproductive rights. And if I find out that a company is, for instance, making their insurance for their employees that won't give contraception or won't allow abortions, you know, that, to me, is not right.
Okay. All right. And let's go to Diana. Diana, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a big believer in my beliefs should drive my spending, And as a result, I look at the dollars in my wallet as bullets, and I use those bullets wisely. On a couple occasions, I have been forced to shop where I don't want to, and to make myself feel better, for instance, having to purchase something at Chick-fil-A for my grandson, I take that amount that I spent and quadruple it and make a donation to LGBT charities.
Sort of an ethical offset?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Gianna, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. That's an interesting idea. Rachel Kelly, is that innovative?
That is innovative. And one of the things that the Ethical Network of San Antonio has been involved in is being creative in ways that we can be consumers. You know, for example, to offset the cost of maybe purchasing new items, we recently just co-hosted a clothing swap at the Impact Guild. And so we had about 25 women who came. They brought all their clothing, and then they could swap. We had a wonderful event. And so that's a way that if you don't have the funds maybe to go out and shop ethically, that you could come and have a whole new wardrobe for free. The same thing, starting food cooperatives or food co-ops. We want to get people to think creatively and to do things differently so that, you know, it doesn't hurt their pocket.
But real quick, last issue I really want to hit on is just because someone is maybe buying a brand that you don't agree with and it's not your thing, I mean, you shouldn't shame them or look down on them for that. They got to live with their own life, right?
Right, and I think we live in a country where we get to have our own beliefs and values, and we shouldn't shame them. I mean, that's the beauty of where we live, and we get to shop with our dollar, and we can choose to go to a place or not to go to a place, and there should be no shame in that.
Diana Pearl, last question really quick. Is this growing? Is this the trend continuing?
Definitely. I think we'll only see more and more brands, you know, either align themselves with causes or start doing things like providing greater transparency, you know, in regards to how their product is made and how it's produced and things like treating their workers well and giving, you know, even things like paid family leave. And people care about that stuff and they want to see it in the companies that they support. So I think this is really only the beginning.
All right, Diana Pearl. She's a writer for Adweek covering brand marketing. Julie Irwin is a professor in the Business, Government, and Society and Marketing Department at the University of Texas at Austin. And with us in the studio, Rachel Kelly, co-founder of the Ethical Network of San Antonio. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.